Fads come and go, and nowhere more than in the world of weight loss. That's why Noom's weight management programs are made to last. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 590. Have my usual early week guest, as always, to help recap Fab and talk about some other, you know, great questions you guys came up with this week, some other players to dive into, as it's always a wacky world out there. You can follow me on Twitter at BDentric and my host, co-host, I'm going to call him co-host, as usual, early in the week, on Twitter at Mike_Curlin. Mike Curlin, how are you doing, my friend?
Hi, Bubba. How are you?
I'm doing great. Doing great. It's great to see you again, Mike.
Is it, though?
It is. It's better to see you than to get your 1,000 texts in our group chat. So
Hey. It's been, our group has been quiet lately. Very quiet.
It has been quiet because we're intimidated when we're dealing with the top 10 main event guy right now. It makes it really difficult to hold our weight in there.
I hate you so much. I have no problems holding weight personally, but
me neither.
But yeah, I've been, you know, we'll address that, I guess. Yeah, so I am top 10 overall. It's my 2 weeks in a row now. I've been ninth, I think. I was reading Whitestone's article over at FTN. It's a free article he puts out over there, and my name's been in it twice. And he mentioned, he's like, oh, he held down his spot. And I'm like, oh, cool. Didn't realize I was ninth back-to-back weeks. But yeah, so it's been top 10. It's still early. So obviously I wasn't over here. Like, I don't even think I was texting you guys about it, because Simeone was the one who blew it up, because he had no idea. Cause I hadn't been talking about it by design, because it's early and there's a lot that can still happen. And now the expectations are up here. And if I come up short now, I'm going to be upset. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm going to be upset, because obviously I want to continue to compete and do well, but it's not easy, and it takes a lot of work. And I have four more months of this, mm-hmm. So yeah, we'll get there.
Oh, it's all good. It's just fun. I wanted to have some fun with you on that.
Yeah, you know.
But we're a third of the way through the season, so it's cool. You know, like, I look at where I'm at in the rankings every night.
I didn't say I don't.
Oh, I know you do, because you'll text me about it. I don't think you text the group chat, but you'll text me.
I was texting the group chat initially, because the hot start was like, oh, look, I'm like fourth. Oh, look, I'm fifth overall. Oh, I'm 30th overall. Like, it was just, you know, the fluctuation of daily outputs throughout the first month. And now that we're not getting those huge, I mean, we're still getting big swings, but not as big, you know, like a really good day will shoot you up your standings two spots instead of five, you know, stuff like that. So we're getting, like you mentioned, third of the way through, we're getting there. The standings are starting to solidify a little bit, but for everyone I talk to, they say, you know, like late June, early July is a really good idea if you really have that contender for the top spot. So hopefully, obviously, if we sustain the success, we'll be there. I say we, because why not? It is a GTE effort at this point, right? Even though I haven't been, I've been keeping it to myself. Simeone blew up my spot today, and now I have to actually address the fact that, yes, I'm doing well, and I hope I can hold it down.
Let's keep it going. I plan to keep it going. That'd be great. The most I'll say is, as a group, we're having early success in our leagues, at least not overall wise, but I think we're doing pretty well by the sounds of things. So we'll see how that keeps going at GT. Speaking of GT, you guys can check out Gaining the Edge Fantasy on Patreon, patreon.com/GT Fantasy, for as low as $5 a month. Obviously, the more you pay, the more cool stuff you get, like Curlin's awesome, lineup and, you know, streaming tool. You got Stimion's tool. I'm still kind of trying to fine tune the DFS tool we're looking at. There's a lot going on. And we got a bunch of ideas coming up, so it's a pretty cool setup we got there. But for low as $5, it's all it takes. You get the Discord and a bunch of cool stuff there. But one thing you do get if you pay $10 or more is you get a waiver wire article. If you pay $20 or more, you get an NFC Fab article. So let's recap some Fab, Curlin. Let's talk about 12-team OCs. We're going to do it different order this week, doing the Fab first because you guys came up with so many good listener questions. We'll do listener questions and some deep dives at the end. But I wanted to make sure we got to some of these players. So we'll start with the big ad of the week. And this was a fun topic of conversation on Twitter and especially in our Discord with Matthew Liberatore. And I even left him out of my articles. I just kind of made a point to mention in the Discord, hey, this is why he's out. This is my quick thoughts on Liberatore. I was very concerned by Ollie Marmol because A, he's a moron, and B, that he flat out said he's scheduled to start on Tuesday unless an opportunity from the bullpen comes into play, and he's more likely to be a bullpen role than a starter the rest of the way. That just took him way off the board for me. I'm like, I'm not even putting a lot of money into it, blah, blah, blah. Well, in a 10-3 game on Sunday, Matthew Liberatore came in to pitch. That was awesome. Gave up two runs, the ending of the work, after a great start against Milwaukee where he struck out 6-5 shutout. Long story short, he was adding 197 leagues. OCs, max bid of 250, a low bid of 2. It just shows you the range. The $2 make, like, I think I put in like maybe 20 to 30 buck bids on him. I was just not even really going crazy. So with all that being said, that kind of tells everybody my thoughts on Matthew Liberatore, because I think he could have been the best pitcher out of this prospect bunch if we knew he was locked in, but I had no confidence in him being locked in. So what's your thoughts?
Yeah, and then when you look at mains, just to go on the other side of things, he went as low as $19 in the main, it blows my mind because the next lowest bid was $64. So that's kind of like the outlier. But even then, under $100 and almost, I think, I'd say close to a third of the winning bids in mains were, we're under triple digits, but it is what it is. Like, you're seeing, and there was a big disparity. A lot of runner-ups were quite off some of the higher bids too, but you mentioned it, bullpen role potential, but then they're talking about, oh, he's going to start Wednesday, but then Liberatore goes out. It's just so uncertain. But the stuff looked great. Obviously, the velocity was there. The strikeout stuff is there, but the role is uncertain. The Cardinals are uncertain. I don't know what to think, and that explains why the bids fell the way they did, and it might be a steal because I'm with you. Liberatore was actually one of the reasons why I wasn't getting in on Bybee. Was one of the reasons why I wasn't getting in on the Mason Millers of the world, because I was kind of sitting back waiting on them. Luckily, I landed on Logan Allen as kind of like that more a cheaper of the expensive option, so to speak, and I honestly was kind of torn if that was even worth it, but considering now we have so many questions with Liberatore's role that I don't know. I think I made the right choice in hindsight, luckily. But like I said, Liberatore, I'm with you. He was one of those guys where I viewed him in that grouping of like the Bybees and such. But now I don't know if that was appropriate considering so many unknowns right now. And the reason why he entered him as a relief role that over the weekend was kind of a way just to get him that ending of work in between starts, because his start is, again, he's supposed to start again, I think, Tuesday or Wednesday. So today or tomorrow, I think it's tomorrow was the last I saw.
Yeah, because Wainwright got moved up to Tuesday. Once Liberatore came in the game, Wainwright got moved up because Liberatore came up to move Wainwright back earlier in the week.
Yeah, so that's why I don't understand. It's a fucking Marmol. It goes back to Marmol being Marmol, right? He's going full Marmol. You never go full Marmol. Just like you never go full Rocco Baldelli, but that's another discussion too.
Oh, wow. But, man, that was a fun one on Monday night on Twitter. Oh, boy.
Dude, my mind was blown. I started Julian. Because I'm like, all right, cool. He's batting fourth. He obviously, we know the lefty's coming in, but why would they start him if they weren't going to let him kind of hit through the lefty? I know Julian's in a platoon, so it's Kurloff. Kurloff got one at bat against a righty, and then he came up in the third, got pulled because Minaya was still in. Julian didn't even get in a bat. So I was like, what the heck's going on here? So people are like, are they injured? And I'm like, no, it's Baldelli just went full. Like, let me get my lefties. I just don't understand why he didn't put the righty bats in there, knowing that it was likely
Minaya was coming in like the second or third inning.
It was so that was the thing, though. Maybe he was trying. That's why he stacked the top with the lefties. Maybe thinking, okay, cool. But now, if the game went into extras or anything like that, you're looking at what? No pinch runners, no pinch hitters really available off your bench at this point to drain that in the first three innings blew my mind. But these coaches, these analytic teams, they know more than the average fan. So I can't say I'm just questioning it because I don't think I've ever seen that. Yeah, at least over the last few years, since platooning has become so heavily introduced into lineups, I don't recall ever seeing something this extreme to where they're pulling players before they record a single at bat, as when they're plugged in the bat fourth for a lineup.
It wasn't just Julian. It was, I think, that Kurloff got benched.
Kurloff led off, and he got benched in the third inning when he came back up.
Yeah,
That's why I was like, that's why I was having a hard time really understanding, because it was just the first time I've ever seen it be that extreme. We've seen the fifth inning, the fourth, even the fifth, sixth inning, we've seen people start getting pulled if they're in strict platoons and all that. You know, the Stuart Fairchilds of the world, stuff like that. But these aren't that bad of hitters in terms of, like, I mean, I get it. Lefties, they might not hit well, but to pull them so early, it blew my mind. We'll see if that's something that continues. It's something to keep an eye on. That's why the lineup analysis is getting so much more important, because a platoon these days can be two platoons. One that's like, all right, they're starting reverse right, but they aren't getting pulled, and so they're getting their full plate appearances that game. Or it's like, no, it's a strict platoon. They're getting two, maybe three plate appearances if you're lucky. But conversely, they do come in when a lefty starter starts, because then when the righty comes up, they'll platoon with the other bat. You know, it's vice versa. So let's look at those same platoon splits, I'd say, in terms of plate appearances. But it's just so much. Some teams more than others. Some players more than others, too. So it's a lot to focus on. But, yeah, anyway, back to Liberatore, I guess. This is why we started with the names early, right?
Yep. This is the whole point of this.
It's just one of those things. Well, it just goes to show you that some of these managers, you have to understand their tendencies to the best of your ability. Obviously, it's hard to understand Marmol and such. But if you can understand their tendencies, you get a better read for the situation and allow you to react better as a fantasy manager. And Marmol, I think, again, Liberatore, I think his leash is short, and I think he has a role for now. And that's why the bids were what they were. But I understand the bids still getting up there because people do need pitching, and he has a ceiling not as high as a Bryce Miller type, but he's definitely in the conversation with at least a Logan Allen type, if not above him even. So, and I was with you again. It goes back to circling full circle. I was completely with you on it, and I guess that's kind of all we can say at this point. Kind of watch and see approach.
Yeah. And I'm with you. I agree with you. Also, this could bite me in the butt in a big way, because like we both said, we think he's really, really good. And looking at RotoWire's projected starters, you're supposed to pitch Tuesday. Obviously, they were recording. That does not happen. He is projected to pitch Saturday right now at Cleveland. But the fun part is you
how
know,
can if, he, if, if I think how name, that would line up.
Well, the thing is, if the name's in bold, that means it's locked in. His name is not in bold. So yeah, I'm just going to say that's still subject to change. But it's supposed to be Waino Tuesday, Matt's Wednesday, Mikolas Thursday, Flaherty Friday, Liberatore Saturday.
I'm so confused. I thought Liberatore was Wednesday. Oh my goodness. Okay. No, I quit. No,
he's not till Saturday. That's what I'm saying. It's like,
oh, I thought
he might end up coming out of the bullpen because Matt's gets blown up on Wednesday. That could happen. Who knows?
Well, yeah, like, I thought the whole point of him pitching over the weekend was to get, you know, how in between starts, pitchers would throw bullpens. Bullpen
session. I know. That's what people were saying on Twitter. And I was like,
that's my understanding of the usage that it was supposed to be. At least that's my understanding of why they threw him in the end game to not waste the bullets, which he ended up not having a good relief outing. And now as a relief pitcher, he might not be, you know, some starters don't know how to pitch and relieve. It's not the same as coming in. That's why you see starters come in the World Series or in the playoffs as a reliever and struggle, because it's not the same as starting a game. There's routines. There's a lot of these guys have when you really believe in something that's not real. I can't think of the word. Superstitions. Superstitions. Yeah. So a lot of these players have superstitions, have routines, and you throw them off, young or old, it doesn't matter. A lot of these guys won't be able to perform appropriately due to like just the way they just that transition out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. Like I don't know if last time he's made a relief appearance. But anyway,
I don't know. All right. Enough Liberatore, but basically it was one of the ones where as we've been bidding so much on other guys, like you've been actually pretty frugal with your bidding in a good way. So you could have gone for him. I'm like, I can't waste that money with the unknown. I couldn't do it with the unknown is what I'm saying. Like I have like $300 to $400 left in a lot of leagues. I couldn't risk $100+ thinking, okay, he could be in the bullpen or sent back down. That's where I was really torn on Liberatore.
So I had $479, so I didn't exactly have a lot. I had enough to bid on him, but I have enough for one more. I know we have a question about it, so we'll talk about all-in bids, but I have enough. I look at it like I have enough. If I really feel like someone's a true difference maker to my team, I have enough for one more go after him bid. And I'm afraid, but even then, it's a whole strategy discussion, and I don't want to we'll talk about more when we get to the question, but it's one of those things where you mentioned I have enough. I'm like, I do, but I don't, depending on how I feel. So, but anyway, as we were.
All right, let's go to Matt McClain, the top hitting prospect for the week. This week, I'm going to specify that. At an 186 league. Surprisingly, that's not every league. McClain did not get added in every league. So that was a bit of a surprise for me, because I highly doubt he was drafted to be on the pick him up early world. But 186 leagues, as high as 235, as low as $2 again, which was quite surprising. McClain was hit well in his first few games, a couple 0-for games against the Yanks, two more hits on Monday night. He's got three doubles on the season so far. He had 12 homers, 10 steals, hitting well over 300 in AAA. He is striking out 44% of the time in his first six games, which is a bit concerning, but also I guess not super surprising at the same time. So what are you doing with Matt McClain? It was kind of like Liberatore. I had like keep him on his bids, but I wasn't going crazy.
Yeah, this wasn't the hitter I wanted to go after. If I was going to make a splash, I do think McClain can be, I mean, he's starting shortstop, batting second, and gets cost Cincinnati as home. You like all that. The minor league numbers, very flashy for McClain. You know, the double-digit steals, the great plate discipline, the power. I think all that's going to come, especially as long as he's holding it down. I just don't know what to expect in terms of playing time, because with all the – how long is the leash here? Are they going to give him full run? He deserves a legitimate chance. But you also have – Ellie De La Cruz coming. You have these other options that are there. So it's like
Encarnacion and Strand. They got all kinds of dudes
coming up. And then players got to shift. And they should be able to make room for all these guys, by the way. Noelie Marte, except they should have room for all these guys, including McClain. It's only one C.
I know. That threw me off the first time. What was more surprising? Here's a hint. This is why you guys tangents with me and Curlin. The McClain spelling. I'm going to say it wrong for everyone. It's an apology. McClain. I'll just say it like a million times. Or the Emmanuel Valdez. Took me forever. I literally almost tweeted it out when I was doing work last week. I'd actually spell his name because I just kept saying Emmanuel, thinking who does Emmanuel, and I couldn't find it in FanGraphs. I was like, what the hell is this? It's ENM, not EMM. Yes. I was like, whoa.
I couldn't find him in Fab the other week. I couldn't find McClain in Fab either because of I kept misspelling it. So I was like, what am I doing wrong? I'm like, oh yeah, there's no C, there's no second C. But yeah, so yeah, going back to McClain, I'm trying my hardest here. It's so hard. At least the swing and miss there, or the strikeouts, it looks like it's a passivity thing. And I prefer my strikeouts like this for a young hitter, because his zone contact is 89.5% early on. His chase rate's only 30%. For reference, league average for both of these, the zone contact was 89.5. League average is 85.4, so way above average. The chase rate, he's about league average. He's actually a little better, 30% even compared to 31.5. And the swing strike rate, he's about 1.5% better than league average there too. So you're getting a lot of... That's what's happening with him right now. It's not a swing and miss issue, which is nice, which again, it goes back to showing that strong plate discipline will probably translate as he, you know, pitchers are attacking the zone. I think he has a 66% F strike percentage, which is first pitch strike percentage. And that's one of those things where if he's that passive, maybe he's not attacking first pitches and all that. So there's going to be some adapting both ways. I do think he has a bright future. Again, considering all this stuff, I like him. I didn't need middle infield either. I could use it, but at the same time, it wasn't a pressing need right now. But I don't know. I'm trying to think what he went for triple digits in my league. And again, there's other names I like that I'm like, maybe I'll hold off on, see if I can get by without him type of thing. But I do think McClain was a very solid, player to go after. I do think he's going to be just fine moving forward. And I would, if you got him, you should be happy and excited considering the power potential, speed potential, home ballpark, batting second. He checks all those boxes. I think he's going to be just fine once he adapts to some major league pitching here.
Yeah, I agree with you. Like he's a really solid pickup. I just wasn't either in need or willing to break the bank for type pickup. So totally agree with you.
Money's getting tight.
Yeah, I have to be real. When we recap our bids, you're going to see why I was not bidding on McClain and who I was bidding on and for how much money, because it was bargain basement shopping, baby.
Yeah, that's where I was at.
Michael Lorenzen, and we had a question from our buddy Ben Tidd, and we can kind of answer it throughout this. He basically added, after this week's two start, is he worth basically holding on to and streaming from time to time? We'll get into this because I'm kind of leaning yes, but we'll see. Lorenzen was added in 145 leagues, as high as $64, as low as $1. He gave it five runs in 5 2/3, 3 homers, 2 walks, 5 Ks. A lot of that damage was done in like the first inning against Lorenzen. He settled down pretty darn well overall. And what really got my attention when I was digging in over the weekend on him, his three previous starts, he threw 6 or more, he threw 20 innings in those three starts, 2 total runs, 11 Ks. He did have a 4.3 xFIP, so obviously there was maybe some luck factor involved there. But all in all, looked like a pretty solid arm. He had great two-step this week. The first one against the Royals didn't go as planned. But I think we've seen signs of Lorenzen being good at times. That's what I'm trying to say. So he was obviously picked up in most leagues this week for the two-step. That's pretty clear-cut. But what's your thoughts on Lorenzen from, I guess, the pickup this week, but also to answer Ben's question going forward, where I think based on matchups, he's definitely going to be in play.
So I look at Lorenzen and I think a lot about Kyle Gibson. Like, it feels like a very similar...
You love Kyle Gibson. That's your boy. He tortured you.
I dropped him actually, my main.
I dropped him. We'll talk about it. I dropped him this week as well.
I dropped, but the thing was the thing is I look at them as very similar in terms of like these are great quality bench streamers. If you don't have good pitching depth on your deeper formats, Lorenzen kind of fits that. Like, hey, put him on your bench and stream him as needed via matchups, via two start streams. Yesterday, you mentioned it, Lorenzen actually, and I was watching this game. I don't know why I was watching this game, but it was on my, I had the, like, all four of them. I had four games going. It was one of them. And he got through, you mentioned, I think it was three earned runs in the first inning, got through. And then it was, I think it was the sixth inning when he was about to be done for the night. Yep. He gave up a two-run shot to Jackie Bradley Jr. of all players.
Yeah.
So, that's the issue. The home runs got the better of him. But when you look at Lorenzen, you mentioned it. He's had seven or eight starts he's had so far. I think it's seven. I think out of his seven starts, three of them have been 5 runs or more. 4 of them have been 1 run or less. It's been all or nothing. And I think that Lorenzen has enough and offers enough to be that team streamer type, the bench streamer type, not a guy you're setting and forgetting by any means, but definitely worthy of that bench stream role as long as he's running decent. Now, if he rattles off a few bad starts of 3 to 6 earned runs, over the next 3 to 4 outings, then maybe you drop him. But with pitching being the way it is, Lorenzen's being better than, I'd say, above average in terms of production, nothing special, but useful. You hold on to him and just stream him from your bench.
No, and you used a good term there that I think people need to focus on more is bench streamer. It's a guy that you don't really want to drop because you're going to keep him for the following week or 2 weeks from now, so on and so forth, where you might not be able to pick him back up. And maybe you can play the game and risk it and try to pick him back up. But is the guy you're dropping him for worth it for that one start? So that's the idea of the bench streamer situation.
Yeah, Kyle Gibson is still very much in that. He's still in that discussion. I dropped him because I'm fortunate enough to not need him on my bench to stream because I have other options that I like more. Mm-hmm. And I'm decently deep at pitching. But it's very team specific because most people probably should be Ross, again, deeper formats. I want to specify 12s. These guys are probably not even on your radar because I saw Braxton Garrett available in 12s still. And I'm like, he's a guy that I couldn't imagine. But then I realized in 12s, he kind of is just meh. But he's better meh than these meh guys. Mm-hmm. But it goes back to, Gibson's just one of those guys where, again, belongs on your bench or someone, at least someone else's bench. He belongs on a bench being streamed as needed in deeper formats. And Lorenzen fits that category. I would just say that you just kind of have to really look into the matchups and catch him and catch Lorenzen on a hot swing. Like you mentioned, he really was entering this week. I'm surprised that he struggled, but it seemed like it was a little more bad luck considering home run issues. And he hasn't really been a guy to give up a whole lot of home runs. He gave up 3 yesterday, the 6 starts before that, he gave up 3 total, reference.
It was kind of a fluky thing, it feels like.
Aren't the Royals also hitting?
They're hitting easily? extremely well in the month of May. In the month of May, they're one of the best offenses in baseball, actually. So it's very surprising. And every time I do my DFS show and I look at versus right-handed pitching, we're like, what the heck is going on with Kansas City?
It's like the Pirates from April.
Yep. It's the exact thing. They switched roles. It's the Spider-Man gif. Lorenzen does face the White Sox on Saturday, so we'll see how that one goes.
It's so iffy with the White Sox.
It is. It's very, very bipolar for them. Brenton Doyle, Colorado Rockies, they have 7 games at home this week. Doyle had 5 homers and 1 RBI, hitting over .300 in AAA this year. He was added in 141 leagues, as high as $72, as low as 1 in these 12-team formats. He did pick up a steal and a run scored on Monday night, so that's a plus. But he came into the week playing really well. If you just look at his last week of production, which not always the best thing to do, but he was hitting .381 with the 2 home runs, 5 extra base hits, 7 RBIs. Strikes out a ton, though. Keep that in mind. Strikes out a ton. But he's got power. He's got speed. More speed than power, more often than not throughout the minors. But pretty solid bat, especially with the Coors setup. So he was definitely on my radar this week.
Yeah, he was a guy that got – I had my eyes on him as well entering, I think, the week before, just because the playing time was trending up. And if that's the thing about Doyle, was that he didn't have the secure righty playing time. He was starting against every lefty. That wasn't an issue, but it was all right, 2 out of 4 righties, 3 out of 5. And now suddenly Doyle, he's earned it. Doyle's pushed his way into an everyday role. And that's kind of where the difference is now, that you don't have to worry about him seeing. I mean, they've seen a lot of lefties over the last 30 days. 10 of their starts have been against lefties. Out of their 27. So over 50% of their matchups have been against lefties over the last 30 days for the Rockies. So Doyle's playing time, one of those things where you couldn't tell if it was just a day off or what, but it was just one of those things where it was just lining up where so 2 lefties, 2 righties, a lefty, right? It was just the way the schedule worked for them. Doyle was getting plenty of run and enough to mask those playing time issues. But again, as I mentioned, Doyle has worked through those. And there's a lot of swing and miss, but there's it's very toolsy, under the hood. Can't think of the word, profile. So Doyle's a guy that you ride it out. I don't think there's long-term appeal here. I don't think there's long-term staying power, but I do think as long as someone is playing every day, has the tools and has cores to call their home park, you're plugging them in and seeing where it goes. Especially for this week with what, seven, I think there's seven.
All seven games are in Coors. Yep.
Isn't that happening again in 2 weeks? Like next week is all home, all road games the week after.
Yes, so he's going to be a hold. Yes.
You hold Doyle, but the problem is does Doyle struggle enough on the road to loosen up playing time entering the next home series? That's like one of those things where it's like, I feel like his leash could be kind of short considering they have Grichuk. They have Bryant, obviously. They have Profar. They have
Willie Castro, who's playing all the time.
Harold Castro, okay? Harold Castro.
Right. Willie's in Minnesota, sorry.
You know
they're
why?
Both playing all the time. They're both playing all the time.
Harold Castro is on a strong side platoon. He has started against six straight righties, I think, actually. Yep. I know this because we'll talk about him later, but guess who added him and streamed him this week because there's six out of seven righties. Yes. Yes, and he went 0-for-4 last night. So against the Marlins pitching. So
last week I told you about my Massey and Prado pickups. They were mediocre, but they each hit home runs over the weekend last week. Made me feel a little better to finish the week.
How about my Jake Bowers stream? One stolen base on Monday and then 0-for-16, I think, rest of the week.
Crazy, man. You can do all the right things, but if they don't produce it, don't freaking matter.
I was really banking on that Franchi Cordero spike week, and I think he had it, but it was the week before was the issue. Before everyone added him, he kind of had this. He just showed it off towards like, okay, there might be enough there. Had really good matchups, had all the righties, and it didn't matter. And he even hit top five all week last week, Jake Bowers did. So I feel like that was one of those where the process didn't equal the results type of thing. It happens. Yeah. But we bounced back this week, and we'll talk about those ads soon enough. So
Jake Berger, people dropped him when he got hurt. You fools, you. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm one of them. Oh, look,
it made sense for an oblique injury. He came back on 10 days, which is not normal. 127 leagues. He was re-added in as high as 177, as low as a dollar. Pretty sure I got him in some league. I don't know if it's one of my OCs or my other 12s I'm in. But since he's come back on the 14th, 379, three homers, five extra base hits, hit 414 ISO. BABIP's through the roof. But he's got 10 homers on the year. There's no denying Jake Berger's power. My question was always playing time because Yoan Moncada came back while Berger was on the IL, and Moncada's hitting well. He is hitting well. The White Sox don't have Tony La Russa anymore because they're like, screw it. I don't care if it's lefty, righty, what it is. Moncada's hitting cleanup. Berger's hitting. He's hit second or seventh, it feels like, most games. And he's playing versus lefties and righties. So as long as Berger's playing, I love this bet, especially if you need power.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm obviously upset that I dropped him, but it was one of those things where I have Chapman, I have Young. So I already had third base covered. I was using Berger as a util, and then you mentioned the oblique. I thought the oblique was going to linger, just like we always see obliques linger. I thought it was going to be like 3 weeks to a month. I really did. I was like, okay, oblique, he's done for like 4 to 6 weeks usually for an oblique for a hitter. Yeah, and of course, it was so minor that he showed up. Like you said, he did the minimum stay, and then he went for way more than I rebid on him again. But so I'm missing out. I'm not happy about it. But, you know, it is what it is. The swing and miss is there. The chase is there. The chase issues are there. So Berger's going to go through streaks considering he's very much willing to chase out of the zone, have some swing and miss in his game. A 286 BABIP doesn't sound like a lot, but for him, I feel like that's kind of like on the high end. So I don't know if necessarily that's going to regress too much. But 271 hitter, I don't buy that. Even if he's close, but he could be closer to the 250. He usually sits around 250, 253 last couple outings, minus his little 2023 AAA batting average. But all things considered, I think Berger's really solid and difference-making in power. And they mentioned Eloy is trending back towards rehabbing this week, but they want to have him do – it sounds like they want to have him like a bit of an extended rehab session, let him get some fielding under his belt too because they want to get him in the outfield, which makes sense. If they want to keep Berger in the lineup, they're going to have to figure out something. Second base is an option. I was like, Jake Berger is not going to be a good second baseman, but he played there last year for five games, so it's not unheard of. I was going to actually look at Moncada because I wondered because Moncada feels like he could play better second base. I know Moncada is actually a decent fielder, though, from my understanding.
Well, and he's also another guy you don't want to move too much to get hurt also. Like they have all these little guys you got to keep in bubble wrap.
Moncada hasn't played second base since 2018, and he had a negative 18 outs above average for reference.
Alrighty then.
Whereas right now he has a 1 outs above average, was a 4 outs above average third baseman last year, so obviously he still has some time to get that going. But he's definitely a plus third baseman especially compared to second base. So yeah, Moncada was the initial thought to me. Oh, they can just move Moncada. There's something about Moncada just scream second base. Cause I swore he played second base for the Red Sox or something stupid, right? No, it was they brought him up. I guess in 2016 he played third base for the Red Sox at the major league level, and then 2017, 2018 he played second base at the major league level and was awful. And that's when the transition happened to third base, I guess. But yeah, Moncada. So Berger played second base more recently than Moncada, oddly enough. And that's their biggest weakness right now in terms of a hole with Andrus out. But at the end of the day, Berger, he's going to stick in this lineup. I think it's going to be on. I just, it's one of those things when Eloy returns, then it gets kind of iffy. Does Sheets go into a strict platoon again? Or he's already in platoon, but does Sheets lose playing time? Does Berger lose some of that playing time against righties? Because you're not going to sit Eloy. Eloy looked great right before he got his random appendix burst or whatever. Like, he was actually really heating up those 2 weeks or so prior to. So we'll see if that can, if they can return the form, if Eloy can return the form, plus Berger can sustain it. But at the end of the day, I really like what we're seeing here from Berger, and I do buy into it largely.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's weird to see the White Sox with an embarrassment of riches at the moment. So,
we'll see. At one spot, only at DH.
At DH, yeah, because they have no defense. They're a slow pitch softball team. They need to figure it out.
Yeah, they all need to just get drunk before the game and go out and hit dingers.
I think Berger would have a great time with that personally. Andrew Vaughn would.
I feel like Berger would sponsor the event.
Yes, he'd actually flip burgers. Gavin Stone. Picked up in 120 leagues because he was stashed already. As high as 177, as low as a dollar, though. Thank you, 12s. I was nervous. I tweeted it out. I'm like, hey, welcome back to the bigs, kid. You get Atlanta at Atlanta and Tampa Bay at Tampa, your opening week. It's like, wow, that's pretty freaking awesome, guys. And it went kind of as thought. And it was mainly the first inning. He settled down. I'll say that much. He settled down actually pretty nicely. He went 4 innings, 5 earned, a home run, 5 walks, though, and 1K. In his 2 outings, 8 innings, 9 runs, 7 walks, and 2 Ks so far. It has not been ideal for Gavin Stone. Bobby Miller's coming up to pitch on Tuesday. Julio Urias is expected back the series early June against the Yankees. So, yeah, you pretty much got Bobby Miller and you got Gavin Stone and Michael Grove is rehabbing also. But those two are bidding for Dustin May's spot. And they got about 2 to 3 starts to figure it out. So what's your thoughts on Gavin Stone?
I mean, you can't start him with any confidence right now, but I do think you should be holding on to him, obviously, if you can, especially on the bench. Stone, I mean, the hard hit rate's okay. It's not terrible, 38.2%. The barrel rate is, like, not terrible, 8.8%. Not great by any means, but it's one of those things where it's like, I mean, it's negative 11.6. Negative 11.6 K minus walk rate. That's not,
but not ideal, folks.
The walks are weird because he's never been above a 10% walk rate in the minors at all. And then suddenly in AAA, and then obviously in the majors, the walks are an issue. I don't know if he's having issues locating or commanding his pitches like he normally does. I don't know if it's, I mean, but he's also terrible strand rates, terrible BABIP against. I understand a lot of that is earned and deserved, but he's doing all this without allowing a ton of home runs. That goes back to limiting the hard hit balls. So there are reasons for like semi-optimism. Plus, he's still a rookie. He's struggling is okay. You know what I mean? Like, it's frustrating that I think what it is we're spoiled. We see these guys come up and just do really well. The Millers of the world, insert Miller, you know, any Miller at this point.
Yeah, they're all Millers.
That's why Bobby Miller is going to flourish, obviously, just because of his name. No other reason, just because of his name. But you have, you know, Logan Allen's doing well. Not nothing spectacular. Bybee, you know, ups and downs, mostly up. But, like, you know, he's kind of come back down to earth in terms of just being good, not great. But at the end of the day, even if Stone was that, kind of where I'd put it, I was thinking maybe Stone would be more like a Logan Allen. He hasn't put that up yet. And I don't know what to do with him in terms of, like, I would definitely be holding on and trying to stash on my bench, especially in shallower formats even. But yeah, he hasn't shown. It's almost like Jared Schuster. Schuster took him, what, 3-4 starts, and last start was his first real start to figure it out.
He's our next one to talk about.
So I'm really curious about it. Can we just transition?
Yeah, let me set it up for a second. But
yeah,
Schuster was added in 91 leagues, as high as 151, as low as a dollar. And like you said, he went 6 innings, 1 earned on a solo shot, 1 walk, and 7 Ks. That was the dude we saw in spring training, not the dude we saw before. So where were you going with this? Because I want to know your thoughts, because you dig in on this stuff a lot. Like, do you believe this is what we're getting, or was this kind of a what happened situation?
So with Schuster, what I found when I looked was, okay, so he had his best outing of the year versus the Mariners, right? Mm-hmm. Well, the velo ticked up across the board. Maybe he, you know, maybe he figured out something with his mechanics. Maybe he just felt good that night, whatever it might be. He threw, Schuster threw his slider a season high 34% of the time, and it had a 42% whiff rate. So the slider was effective. He utilized it as much as the four seam. And with that, the four seam came down. The changeup and slider both went up heavily in that game. So it's almost like he, not that he unlocked something, but he went away from his four seam that he was averaging around 45% usage down to 30. Like he dropped it like 10% that game. And relied heavier on the secondaries, which we always talk about. That's kind of a recipe for success for any pitcher. Rely more on your secondaries, drop the fastball usage. And we saw that work. We had less walks in that outing for Schuster, the most Ks in any start this year, a high swing strike rate. Wasn't getting a whole ton of chases, but that's fine because if you're living in the zone and able to induce swinging strikes, you can get by without being a big chase rate guy. However, maybe he won't be a K per inning type. But regardless, Schuster showed a lot of stuff in this start that was very different from the last ones, and he had the most success while doing it. Teams will adapt, of course, but Schuster seems to maybe Schuster figured something out and took that step forward in terms of being something like, all right, cool, there's something here. And we saw it in spring, and it's showing out now, or showed up in this start. Maybe now it's okay, maybe now is the time I start plugging him in, depending on matchups, and go from here. But Schuster, I really liked what I saw in this outing, and I'm intrigued at the very least. I don't, he's not like, he's not an instant plug him in and play him type of guy, but he is a guy that's like, all right, there's reason to believe that success could be coming because he did completely change things up and found success in that last start. And that's kind of one of those tangible changes with tangible results type of combinations I like. However, it's just such a small sample. You have to react before we actually get a true sample size of this, or if this is going to continue, was it a one start thing? Questions you have to have, but you don't, you have to kind of make a get your best educated guess. And my educated guess would be, my educated guess would be that he, that Schuster found something, it worked. He's going to try to stick with something similar or comparable. And hopefully, in his case, hopefully the success follows. I say his case, cause I don't have any shares. So I, if he doesn't, if he's not successful, it's good for me. But
that's what I was going to go with this is he gets Philadelphia on Thursday or Friday this week. I just had it up. Where's that? Friday this week, it looks like. And if he everything sticks the same, he gets at Oakland next week. So that's going to be a fun fab move if he pitch. I kind of want him to pitch poorly against Philadelphia so I can get him cheap to face Oakland.
Yeah, but it's weird because Oakland can hit when they want to. Which, can we talk about Oakland real quick? I have a question with playing time there because I'm a Ramon Laureano. I have him on a couple.
I just wrote him up as a basically sell low candidate. Get him out.
I have no problem selling low on him. I'm just in the outfield is really my outfield. I hit on three outfielders, and Acuna being one doesn't really count. So I hit like really well in my outfield. But I took a Sean Laureano, and you know he's been up or down, pretty down so far this year. I think like a 600 OPS, batting 200, not great. Him and Willie Adames like together are just sinking me. But it's one of those things where look at the playing time now. Seth Brown's back, right? So they have JD Bleda, Seth Brown, Brent Rooker, and Laureano for essentially two outfield spots and a DH spot. Not to mention, and now you would think, oh, well, maybe Seth Brown can go to first base, but they have Ryan Noda. They're willing to give up on Ryan Noda already with that full with his role. So now it's getting kind of crowded there, and it's weird to say the Oakland outfield is crowded. And it's like, oh, Mike, what about that third outfield spot? You mean Ruiz's spot? Ruiz isn't going to lose that playing time.
He's not going anywhere.
And I don't think Bleda stays up without. And I know Bleda has slowed down, so maybe they send They could send Bleda back down. They isn't out of the question
for sure. Yeah.
But it is one of those things where, like I'm waiting for that lineup to come out tonight because the first lineup back, Laureano has played plenty, so it could have just easily been a rest day, 7-game week. But Seth Brown could sit, you know, he ease himself in. So there's going to be, in the short term, I could see Laureano playing 5 out of 7, Bleda playing, you know, all these guys playing 5 out of 7 with Rooker kind of being set and forget everything for this team. But even Rooker slowed down. But point being is that it's getting crowded. Something's going to have to give there. But I'm with you. I mean, I'm not super excited about Laureano. I just noticed that his playing time could be hurt by this because there's just so much going on. But it could be Bleda. I would say Brown, but I think Brown and I feel like Rooker are pretty safe right now.
I think Brown and Rooker are safe. Bleda, I actually started dropping this past week. Like I wrote it out. I had my fun. And I'm like, the kind of writing feels like it's on the wall in that one. Like
yeah,
playing time, because the playing time was like a big concern already and the production fell with it. So
yeah, the strikeout rate started spiking a little bit. I noticed right after I said, yeah, you should probably grab him on the HQ show. And I realized like a couple days after that day, he just started going like 0-for-4, 3Ks. I'm like, what the hell just happened?
It was ugly for sure.
It's okay. Timing is my thing.
Real quick, since I'm going to take us on the pivot here. Since you're talking about Jared Schuster and his pitch mix change, I know Simeon mentioned it in our group text because I didn't look deep enough until he said it, but I was doing the first pitch pod and I'm like, dang, you know, Tanner Houck had a great outing last night. Where did this come from? Like it was so documented. First time through the rotation, he's been good. Second time, pretty bad. Third time, horrific. Like it's just been a trend. And then Simeon, like right out the gate, hey, pitch mix change, like major change. And he did. His slider usage has been creeping up, but just soared. Pretty much dropped his sinker. His cutter went down a bit, and his splitty took a big hike. So he's a slider splitty, split finger guy for the most part. Now sustainability, we'll see. But just for fun, because I know like I either dropped him or was thinking about dropping him this past week. I know I'm not alone in that scenario. If like, and we don't see him again this week because the Red Sox go in 6-man rotation. So we won't know Tanner's next outing until he faces actually he's not scheduled. Wow. They have a lot of work to do. He's technically not scheduled to pitch till next Saturday. He's the random sixth dude with Garrett Whitlock coming back. I think that's another reason why I dropped him. Huh. So what's your thoughts on Tanner Houck? The more I dig into this, even the pitch mix change kind of concerns me with the playing time.
That's all it is we don't know. Like now, if Bayo goes out, you better say my Bay the right way. Listen, I drafted him. I stashed him. And I never dropped him. So I'm with you. I mean, I know he's your guy. Don't get me wrong. I'm not here to take that away from you. I'm just saying that I wasn't. I'm a little in here. Okay, I'm a little invested. A little bit, not enough, but a little bit. Anyways, Bayo. What if Bayo goes out and struggles today? I don't think he will. But if he does. Not that the team is rooting for an injury or struggles, but there's so much room for like, okay, one guy has an injury, one guy has a setback, Paxton has a hamstring issue again or something. I think they want to keep Houck, Bayo, and these guys. They want to keep them stretched out. But yeah, I noticed that too. Like obviously you mentioned Simeon kind of hit us with that text first thing in the morning. And one thing that I am thankful for it with those Savant recaps is I usually catch a lot of the stuff. So I went in and looked myself because I was like, of course he said it. And
this is why I asked you, because I knew you were into it some way.
So I looked and he's changed up his pitch mix over the last three outings. Slowly ramping up the slider each of the last three outings, which last outing, yesterday was the most Houckest on the slider. It was the fact they spiked the usage of the splitter, as you mentioned, and it had a 55% whiff rate. So he had success with it. I just don't know. We all know the splitter is a field pitch. Is it one of those things where, and you mentioned you've seen it with like Logan Gilbert, where he threw a splitter the most last outing and had a great outing for Gilbert. And it's one of those things where this pitch, when thrown well, when commanded properly, it's Gausman's go-to. It's a hell of a pitch. The issue is a lot of players have a hard time getting feel for it. It could be a start-to-start thing. It could be like a month thing. We've seen people have issues commanding it and having a true feel for it. But if Houck found that feel for it, found a grip that works, I didn't see any new movement in it. I think the velo was up, I think almost a tick on it. So that might be a thing. And maybe throwing it harder helps him control it better. But at the end of the day, I'm like, okay, so there's an obvious mix here, pitch mix change again, going with tangible results with tangible change. I love that. But it's one of those things where Houck, you can't know when he's starting. You don't know what's going on with that whole rotation. I feel like any given day, one of those guys can just be booted. Houck is deserving of another look, but we don't know when that look is coming. I think you're stashing him. Anytime a guy goes out and spikes an outing like that, you take notice, and you know how can be. We've seen him be very electric in many starts in the past. At this point, I think Houck's a guy that you want to make a point to stash if you can, especially in deeper formats. In shallower formats, I get it. You kind of have a hard time holding on, but you don't want to let go of somebody who showed success this last start the way he just did. If that playing time comes back around, then someone else might have him, and it's like, oh, I would really be trying to hold on to Houck right now.
Yep, I'm with you. I was just curious your thoughts, and then I looked at the potential starters, which none of them are bolded, so a lot of that can change. It is Tuesday after all, but they have a lot of options. Heck, they put Pivetta in the bullpen. Not that was a bad move, but that's just another starter they could have. Like they have options right now for once, which is something to keep in mind. Before we get to listener questions, let's review our ad drops for the week, if you have that available, my friend. I know you're a busy man when it comes to ad drops, so I'm curious what you did this week.
Well, it's funny because I'm very busy, but I only have the one Fab League. I'm turning and burning a lot of spots. I made four moves, which for me is a lot in this league. So it's my main event. Owen Miller, Akil Baddoo, Harold Castro, and Derek Hall are where my ads this week.
You say Derek Hall. Nice.
I stashed Derek Hall.
Yeah, I was going to ask, what are you hearing on him that makes you want to stash him?
He should be starting a rehab soon, and he's eligible to come off the 60 IL June 5th. So that's 2 weeks.
Good stuff.
So I got him $5 to zero, which in a 15-team league, I put it up to five because I know he's a strong side platoon bat, but we're talking some of the bigger upside for power there. That's all this was a power upside stash, Nair and rehab. And yeah, it'll be a strong side platoon, but you can stream for that. Plus, it's a great lineup. So it's just more a spec play. I mean, he'll also be one of my first drops, unfortunately, if I need one beyond these guys. Like Harold Castro, we talked about a little bit top of the show, that he's been hitting well, good. I need some batting average help. He has 7 games at Coors, 6 being against righties, and he's been platooning on the strong side against righties. So I think there's 6 out of 7 starts there for him. And last night versus a lefty in the bullpen, he didn't get pulled. So I don't know if it was just because they didn't have any other options or whatever, but he should. So he stayed. He's not like a super strict platoon compared to your typical. I mean, it's strict, but it's not strict enough to where he's getting pulled after, you know, one inning like Julian. And then Akil Baddoo, he's been weird. I've been watching him. I looked at his stats a little bit. I'm like, I know, again, another platoon guy, but 6 of 7 against righties this week for Detroit. So Baddoo, though, he's walking a ton, which is kind of something he's been doing the last couple years, but the strikeouts are way down. So I'm like, all right, so he's making more contact. He has that power, a little bit of pop, a lot of speed. And I thought there's some intrigue. He batted 6 yesterday. So I'm like, okay, Baddoo, I think he went 1 for 4 with a run. Nothing special, but still one of those things where he made my, you know, he caught my attention, was worth streaming considering I told you how my outfield's playing out. I need that fifth outfield type. And we know, and I made a point to get Baddoo. I got him 8 to 5. My bid was 8. 5 was runner up. And I made a point to get him because A, he's outfield. B, he's running hot. C, path to playing time. D, we know what the upside can be if Baddoo actually figures it out. And that kind of, and that all put, I put all that together. I was like, this might not be terrible. So we'll see where it goes. I'm not overly excited, but I'm like, huh, it was the plate discipline that sold me. And then I'm like, well, if the plate discipline's there, we know the upside in terms of power and speed is there. Okay. So I made a point to get him and I'm streaming him this week. And then Owen Miller, I grabbed him because I think he gained third base eligibility as of yesterday.
Yep.
He's like 4 games away from outfield. He's also hitting very well right now, and he was a weak side platoon guy who's been earning full-time playing time. I know injuries, it could be a short-term thing. I honestly probably shouldn't have gone after him too hard.
Yeah, Luis Urias is just starting to rehab assignment, but I'm assuming that'll be a longer than normal one just because he hasn't been out all year. But yeah, that was my concern. Sorry to interrupt you, but no, I know we were talking about Miller in the Discord over the weekend. Like I made a few comments, and you came in with your playing time stuff, so it all kind of balanced out. And then, like I see last night, that Urias is either starting Tuesday or Wednesday in Nashville, yeah, start his rehab assignment.
Exactly. So I know it's probably shorter term, but then I look at it like this. You have guys, not only do they continuously have injury issues, but then you have guys like Jesse Winker who have been terrible.
Well, let's be real. And then, since Brian Anderson's hot start, he's been garbage. Like Miller is better than Brian Anderson right now.
And then if Miller can gain that, my thing was I really need the outfield eligibility. Yeah. I could care less about the rest. But we also saw Owen Miller, I believe, last year with the Guardians for like the first month or 6 weeks, he spiked this amazing run. And Miller could easily be in the middle of one of those right now. I didn't start him for the first half of the week because I had better matchups. And I know he didn't do well. He batted like 8th or 9th yesterday against a righty. Against lefties, he hits towards the top of the order. But it's like all right-handed pitching this week. So it kind of scared me. But I did get him just to see if he can continue that run. So it was Owen Miller, Akil Baddoo, El Castro, and Derek Hall. I spent a total of like $40, maybe 30. And I needed to keep it cheap. I took some shots on upside in the process too. And I got some eligibility help here because Castro, I think, has like 1st and 2nd base as well, I think.
And I guarantee you between the Brewers and RotoWare, they want Miller to be good because Miller time in Milwaukee would be a perfect slogan and t-shirts to make in a heartbeat with those Miller folks. So, and I missed some like O'Doyle rules and Coors. Like you guys can have some fun stuff with this. Come on, people, let's go. All right. My fab, my 3 OCs. And I'm kind of doing what you're doing in a regards of I'm just going to start kind of give me like 3 or 4 guys, churn and burn and go. That's what I did this past week. I added Brenton Doyle. I dropped JJ Bleday, $9 to $7 runner up. And then I did Emmanuel Valdez, dropped Michael Massey. I mentioned picking him up last week. I could see myself using Valdez regularly compared to Massey. I might regret it though. Massey has made great improvements at the plate. But matchup wise, I think the Royals face 3 or 4 lefties this week, if I remember correctly. I actually got it right here. I can tell you in a second because that would have been four lefties this week in their 6 games. And I'm like, I know Massey can play a lot, but he was platooning at times last week. So I did that move 4-0. And then a couple kind of spec/prey pitching. I added JP Sears because I do like what he's doing. I think there's actual improvements there. He might actually be a weekly. He's almost a bench streaming option, it looks like, going forward, potentially. Like a guy we talked about, dropped Chase Silseth 2-0. Then I added Luis Medina, dropped Yiner Cano 1-0. In this league specifically, I need more pitching stat, like counting stats. I looked at the matchup Seattle and Houston, not ideal. Houston's not the world beater they once were at this point in time, but they did have 12 runs last night. So maybe they're heating up. But with Medina, he's gone at least 5 innings in every start. But since getting called back up, 6 innings, 3 runs in each start, 10 total Ks. Excuse me. 10 total Ks. So I like the potential there. He's got a big-time fastball. So I figure for a dollar. Like, as you can tell, he was a dollar. He was not at the top of my waterfall on those ones. So it was literally like, hey, let's see what happens here. In my second OC, we added McLean, went for only 91, Liberatore 86. Wow. Kyle Farmer dropped JJ Bleday 5-3. Jack Flaherty, someone was out there. I said, I'll take a dart. Again, not top of my deal. Drop Michael Massey 4-3. I got Flaherty for $4. I'll take my chances. Like, if he's, I didn't even start him this week. I got him for $4 to see if these little improvements are real. I'm definitely not a Flaherty guy, but for $4, I'll take my chances. I added Dominic Fletcher, dropped Wilmer Flores 4-3, added Tristan Casas, dropped Eddie Rosario 4-3. So I loved all those 5-3, 4-3, 4-3, 4-3. Pretty proud of those bids. As you talked to me last week about, you know, tightening things up. And Casas, if you look at the month of May, has really made some great improvements at the dish. Talked about him last week, I think, on the show too. Then I also added JP Sears, dropped Connor Joe 2-0, and I needed a catcher, so I added Yan Gomes, dropped Connor Wong 1-0. So I was really proud of those bids, actually. Pretty pumped on those ones. And then in my last OC, added Brandon Bielak. I'm big on Bielak this week. He got a great two-step next week. So I want to get ahead of the curve, drop Chase Silseth. Apparently I got 2 ahead of the curve, 9-0. Actually, I had 0 runner-up bids in all of my bids. I got 6 wins. 0 runner-up bids. This is the beauty of OCs, folks. I added Jurickson Profar in Coors Field this week. He's been playing great, like, for the last 2 weeks. Dropped Nick Prado, 6-0. Added Britton Doyle, dropped J.J. Bleday, 6-0. Added Casey Schmidt, who's hitting for average and driving in runs. Dropped Connor Joe, 6-0. Added J.P. Sears, dropped Brad Boxberger, 2-0. Added Luis Medina, dropped Kyle Gibson, 1-0. 0 runner-up bids and 6 bids. That is absolutely probably unheard of. Honestly,
it shows you that because of what's available, people just, again, 12s, it's so much tougher because you find these, it goes back to, I think I mentioned this last week on the show too, was that we find value in these deeper names that aren't as
valuable.
Like, not that,
but some of those ones I was winning like 5-3, 4-3, they got nothing on these.
I don't know if valuable is even the right word. I'm not saying they're not as valuable because they are, especially you mentioned the Coors matchup for Profar, et cetera, but it's one of those things where it's like, do we need that level of knowledge to stream in 12s because of what's available in 12s? I think it's always good to have it. It's definitely good to have that information and knowledge.
Great.
And sometimes
it's a great question.
It worked out. And like you mentioned, Prado's been fantastic and Massey's been fantastic. And if you keep up with, like, okay, these guys are in platoons, but if no matchups, you know, and in 12s, they're not being rostered universally, but if you roster them at the right time, you're out ahead. And that's what it comes down to, hitting those streams in 12s. I think that's the difference maker in 12s, because a lot of guys, teams will be really good, but teams are also reluctant to turn players or sit players that, you know, are good, but haven't been doing much lately. Like Josh Naylor, I was sitting him in leagues when, you know, it was tough to sit him, but at the same time, he's been so awful. How do you keep justifying starting him over a guy that you might have that's been running hot that isn't quite as good and it won't last, and Naylor's going to turn around? But it's just one of those examples where you kind of have to know when to hold him, know when to fold him, you know?
Yep.
And you won't always get it right, but you got in 12s, I feel like I'm a little more liberal with my willingness to move off players to stream players, because
I almost dropped Josh Bell this week. So
I would have, because
didn't quite need to yet in this league, but he's like the next list up there. Like,
well, you have to remember, I'm also the guy who dropped Christopher Morel 2 weeks before he debuted. So I have a quick trigger.
Grain of salt.
But yeah, but I also dropped Oswaldo Cabrera before it became like a popular thing to do. You dropped him in 12s before I dropped him in 15s. I dropped him, and the week after I dropped him, he was still like 92-95% rostered. So I was like, I was one of like 2 or 3 teams that dropped him that week, and then now he's down to 85, and he still has useful days, but his playing time is so weird. He's not doing much, and it's aggravating because I liked him a lot coming into the year, but it's one of those things where you get some right, you get some wrong. You can't play scared, otherwise you're not gonna succeed ever.
And it goes back to, we talked about the process last week. You got to keep it consistent for everything, not just for certain players. Like, if this is how you felt about this scenario, like, it's a joke I make with DFS when I talk about, like, because there's a golf simulator that'll do it, and I talk about for baseball and other ones like lineup predictors. You can do it where they don't show the player's name, it's just the stats, because that's all you want are the stats. So stop thinking about the player's name, think about the situation, the matchups, and the stats. That's what you care about, not the player's name. Don't get too attached.
Meanwhile, I won't sit Willy Adames because I know he can get going any moment, but he's been so
awful. There's levels of players, too.
No, I know, but he's – my argument is always, kind of the same way. Okay, look, start the guys that are doing well, sit the guys that are doing poorly. I honestly keep that simple for most of the roster. I feel like it's been been decently successful so far early on. But then it's like you start getting the guys, and Josh Naylor's like that mid-round guy where it was like, okay, I guess I can sit him out. Adames is a top, what, 5-6 round player in most leagues. And I'm like, I can't do it, but man, do I want to? It's just, I know Adames can go off and he'll hit a home run here and there, but he's back, like right now he's batting like 200. I think his OPS is under 700. Like, oh, it's rough right now. And I don't understand, because Adames is not supposed to be this bad. And no. I don't get it. And the one home run he hit last week was in Tampa. I thought he couldn't hit there. So I'm so confused.
And he couldn't hit. And he didn't do anything in Coors. So I know. And then he goes to San Francisco and does it all.
But he has 8 home runs and 4 stolen bases. But he's hitting 208 in the process. Like, I just don't know what's going on right now. The ground ball rate is up a little bit. The infield fly ball rate is up. So I think what's happening is he's just not barreling the ball. Let me guess, his barrel rate's down. I'm just guessing. Let's see if I'm right. It's not. It's actually it's actually 12.7% compared to 13 last year. The hard hit rate is down, which makes sense because if you're hitting the ball on the ground and if you're hitting more infield fly balls, you're topping it and you're getting under it more. You're not hitting it as consistently hard.
What's his launch angle look like?
I didn't even look at that yet. I don't know. I would guess it's down because the ground ball rate is up. So that makes sense. But usually the launch angle, you can tell by a ground ball rate and foul rate if it's up or down, usually. Yeah. But nothing was really different in terms of, like, he's making just as much contact. He's swinging just as much as ever. The zone swing's a little down, but I don't know, like,
it's the quality of his contact.
It's just the lack of quality. The barrel rate's still good. It's just it's just too many ground balls. What
part of the barrel?
Yeah, apparently he's barely getting the barrel that we want. Yeah. I don't know, man. It's aggravating because there's a lot of stuff that says like he's kind of is who he is. Like he's kind of the same guy as he was last year. Mm-hmm. It's just the production hasn't been there yet. I mean, he was only a 238 hitter last year, so I'm not expecting him to be like a 250, 260 hitter. But I'm expecting better than 208. The BABIP is 241. That's a career low. So there is some bad BABIP luck happening too. All right. Anyway, enough of me ranting.
Willie Adames. Let's do some listener questions here, and then we'll head on out. We already hit a Ben Tidd, the Michael Lorenzen question. So we got that one covered. the guilds. We don't have to answer this. It was just funny. Jake Fraley versus Julio Rodriguez rest of the season. I'm kidding. Sort of. Yeah, Fraley getting benched on Monday night was just full red morons. MKB Fantasy Baseball asks, speaking of the Reds, when do you project EDLC to be called up, De La Cruz to be called up? I get these kind of questions all the time, Curly. I know you do as well. I don't freaking know.
I even mentioned, like, I wish we're not prospect minds. We don't follow we don't follow the farm systems as close as others maybe, but we also, like,
you don't know how these teams operate. Like, in a perfect vacuum, he should be up right now. Like, he's talented, but that's a $1 million question.
I was surprised McClain came up so early over these other guys that they have down there. So it's one of those things where it's like, I don't know what to expect. I'm guessing mid to late June at this point. That's my best guess. I wish I had a better idea. Guys like Chris Clegg might have a better idea. You know, Eric Cross, you know, those guys that like live, eat, and breathe minor league systems, James Anderson, et cetera, et cetera. But I wish I had any idea. I have zero. But I do know that when they do come up, I'll be very interested. Will I have the fab left? I don't know. I'll be very interested.
That's the $1 million question, yes.
There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When it comes to weight management, we tend to put our focus on what we eat. But Noom's approach puts the focus on why we eat. And that's a game changer. Noom uses science and personalization so you can manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. And they help you understand the science behind your eating choices and why you have those cravings. Noom's personalized courses are easy to follow and will help grow your confidence with tools you can put into practice on day one. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. And based on a sample of 4,272 Noomers, 98% say Noom helps change their habits and behaviors for good. Try Noom today and see the results for yourself. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
Finkel has a couple players for us to discuss real quick. Jose Caballero, I've been talking about him on DFS. He had a homer and three steals on Sunday. He went deep again on Monday. In the month of May, he's hitting 342 with two homers, four steals. Obviously, the homers in the last two games, three of the four steals in the last two games. But almost a 13% walk rate, a 19% K rate in May. Hit ISO over 211, which I like to see quite a bit. But the barrel rate and the hard hit rate might suggest otherwise for Caballero. So what's your takes on Mr. Jose Caballero, who, if he keeps this up, is going to be a ridiculous fab play?
So he was on my waterfall, but I didn't make a huge effort at him because I didn't need stolen bases. Now, the power's been a welcome surprise. I didn't expect the power production to be there so early on, but I didn't expect it for Taylor Walls either, so what do I know? Which I heard you, by the way, talking about it on with Bloom, so... So, yeah, I appreciate it. But, yeah, it's one of those things where I still don't get it.
It's giving you a shot. Yeah, because I was just making a joke. I'm like, we talked about it. I got told I was an idiot. And I get it because you weren't wrong in your points. But I'm like, he's doing it. I don't know how to explain it, but he's freaking doing it.
But I will always argue, it doesn't have to make sense for you to add them and stream them. You don't have to – listen, you add and stream first and hope it makes sense later. And that's why my argument is I don't get it. I still don't get it with Wallace for reference. But I would never say don't add them and don't stream them. You always play the hot hand. Mickey Moniak – it looks unsustainable, but you should be starting him right now.
Yep.
It's definitely unsustainable. I mean, 38% strikeout rate.
It's almost 500.
I think it's almost 700. I think it's
640.
Stupid high. But yeah, it goes back to the point of right now, this gentleman, I'm glad you could say it. Caballero? Okay. Mm-hmm. I should know this. You're right.
Jose Caballero.
But he's a guy with, you know, good plate discipline, always has flashed the good plate discipline. I'm a sucker for plate discipline, so that was always a win. The playing time has been there. You know, Colton Wong has been terrible. Caballero, I think, started four or five straight heading into Sunday, so we saw that kind of trending the right direction.
Yep, I think it's his job now.
Well, of course, he hit the home run on Sunday, but also had, two or three stolen bases in the one game. Yesterday, he hit a three-run home run, but you mentioned it, the home run. You're not drafting him for that. You're drafting him for the stolen bases, the batting average. The playing time is there. I like what we're seeing in terms of the batting average and the good plate discipline. And I think the stolen bases are going to stick. The power will come and go probably because there's no real indicators that suggest the power is going to be a thing. But kind of ride it out. Definitely got to ride it out. He's middle infield type. I still think he's more of a deeper league option. I don't know if 12s, he's quite there. I mean, we're talking about a 26-year-old, he's kind of an older guy, older prospect. I don't know how much we should be expecting from him. But all things considered, you know the playing time's there. He's producing right now. It goes back to the argument. Ride it until the wheels fall off. Who cares, you know?
Yep, I agree. I think he's more deep league than shallow, but there will be viable moments there, especially if they do get I'm glad I kept this page up. Next week they get four against Oakland at home and then three against Pittsburgh at home. Not bad matchups.
How many lefties? I'm just curious because if they
play Mueller, Waldichek, and Sears. So three of the four A's games are lefties. And then he's got Keller, Ronzi Contreras, and Vinny V on the week. Oh, that's this week. Never mind. That's this week. Next week, it's the Yankees and then at Texas, and it's one total lefty. Or two lefties.
I'm just asking because I do think that he's going to I do think he's going to play regardless, but I think lefty – there's a reason why they were platooning him against lefties, you know? So I think that maybe that's the stronger side. So, again, just trying to get an idea of – trying to find any little way to see if there's added juice there. You know, if he had, three or four lefties next week, then there's – okay, there's
a little added juice. You'll know by the end of this week because he does have four lefties this week, so you'll have a good idea.
There you go. Yeah, I do know he's going to play every day. It's just a matter of is there some added juice when he plays lefties? Because that's kind of that's one of those things where it's like, okay, if you know a player is going to play every day but has really good matchups, he's really good against righties – obviously, you're more likely to start, especially in the street. If in a shallower league, maybe you're just looking for a boost. And if he's really crushing lefties and he has four lefties on the schedule, even in a shallow league, you stream that, you know, just yeah, why not? Sure. Why not take a shot if you're desperate? Like in our OCQ, I can't catch us up in offense. And I'm like, I'm making the right moves, but I don't know what the heck's going on there. I can't. Our pitching is great. That's why we're still top five. But mm-hmm. I can't seem to make up anything in hitting. And I'm like, I feel like I'm making decent moves and streams there, but apparently I suck at 12, so I don't play them.
Yeah, gotta keep chugging along. Keep chugging
along. We're top.
I check on every night with the rest of mine. Don't you worry.
We're top three, top five most of the time. You know, I'm not making bad moves. I definitely have our pitching. Well, it makes sense because all my teams, the one thing I hit on was pitching. It's offense where it's like maybe I put a little more faith in my streaming process than I should have, is early takeaways possibly, but we'll see. It's still early.
Finkel's other player he wanted to know about was Paul DeJong.
Third in that league right now.
I'm a big Paul DeJong fan. Usually the batting average is a massive hole, and I was worried actually about playing time when he came back, but he's hit his way into playing time. Even though Ollie Marmol's an idiot, he at least plays DeJong, hitting seventh most days. He's hitting .289 now with 8 home runs since he came back on the 23rd of April. 28% K rate, which is actually not horrible in all things considered with Paul DeJong. You look at his Statcast numbers, 14% barrel, 49% hard hit. It's pretty darn solid for Paul DeJong right now. We've seen years of him be very good. We've seen other years of him like you thought he'd never play baseball again. So it's a weird mix here. Similar to like the other guys, ride it till the wheels fall off. I think this is one you could ride for a while. I think as long as he can sustain the slumps, as long as he's playing, which he is for now, I think he's actually pretty solid.
Yeah, I think DeJong is kind of like an in-between 2020 and 2021 version of himself. Like, I think he's closer to that .250 hitter versus the .289 hitter, but that 19 home runs he spiked in 2021, well, he also had 30 in 2019. I think there's like a happy – obviously, he already has 8. So we're looking at DeJong probably being closer to, the mid-20s homer guy. So there's like a mix in terms of like skill sets here. If he hit between .230 and .250 the rest of the way, which projection systems have him at, what, .216, .219 – which is also, I mean, we look at his underlying numbers. He, you know, still very high swinging strike rate. It's like 16%. Again, the average being around 11. So there's issues there. Contact is okay, not great. Striking out nearly 30% of the time for a reason. So if he did hit 220-ish the rest of the way, that wouldn't surprise me, but that might keep him closer to that 230, 240 range by the season's end. But the power's like that power is actually real. Like I do buy into the power spike in terms of like, so as long as DeJong's running hot, you could expect the power to be there. But all things considered, yeah, it's kind of like he wasn't as bad as he's shown the last couple of years. But I don't think he was ever going to be the 30 home run guy we saw in 2019, because that was also the year of the juice ball for a reason. So that's why I'm like, there's a happy medium here between how bad he was and how good he spiked between a couple of years. And if he was like a 240, like 25-ish home run guy, that's gonna play probably, but it might just be ugly how he gets there considering how hot he is now. So ride it out, definitely. I'm just not sure if I buy into it fully. I mean, yeah, DeJong is what it is.
Yep, I'm with you on that one. Curdy J asks, concerns with James Outman after he's cooled down from his hot start. You want to talk cool down since May 12th, he's played 11 games. He's got hits in 3 of them, 1 home run, 1 stolen base, seeing a .129 with a .097 ISO and a 34% strikeout rate. He has a 5% barrel rate and a 25% hard hit rate. It's called a young kid that they figured out. And he has to figure it out again, is the way I look at it personally. And like I've been sitting them right now anywhere I have them. I only have them in DCs, basically. I don't have them in season long. But I am concerned if you have better options, I would use them, is my 2 cents.
Yeah, this reminds me a lot of what we saw with like Sawinski, where he was like blazing hot and then just fell off the cliff. And a lot of it, I mean, second percentile whiff rate for Outman. You know, he's swing and miss is part of his game. He's not hitting breaking balls well at all. Even fastballs, he's hitting them hard, but what, 241 BA, XBA, right, 234, but the slug is 460, but it's like overperforming. I don't know. He has a lot of whiff rate issues, just a lot of swing and miss in his game. It's part of it. I mean, 77% contact rate. League average is 85% for reference. So although he doesn't chase a ton, he has a below average contact rate. Sorry, that was his zone contact. Still below average overall contact. He's still 10% below contact overall in terms of his rate versus league average. That's James Outman. But the swing and strike rate is also 15.5%. So there's legitimate swing and miss issues, and it's showing in the whiffs, and you're seeing pitchers adapt, obviously. I could see him going back to platooning. I think I honestly haven't even looked because I don't have any shares. I haven't kept up on him, but he's having – it's heavily his line, his underlying, his overall line, I should say, his underlying line. Yeah, that's going to be worded poorly. His overall line for Outman, it's one of those things where it's been carried by that really strong start. And all things considered, he's definitely a bench. In 12s, I can see dropping him, I guess. I mean, I know, but we just know it's almost like Swinski. You want to hold on because if it's this type of profile that goes off and on, off and on. Joey Gallo is kind of like this, it's like the poster child for this, you know, a lot of strikeouts, but when things click, man, do they click. And you would think, oh, 341 BABIP is high. He's always been, Outman's always been a really big BABIP guy. 344, 343 in AAA last year, 386 in AA, 368, 349. You get my point. It's always a high BABIP guy. So the BABIP can remain higher than what you'd expect, but he's not making contact right now. So Outman, I'm concerned. I definitely wouldn't be starting him if I had him, but I don't know. It's just hard. It's hard to drop him. I can understand dropping him in 12s. I really could. I just don't know. I can't sit here and say I would do it. I don't have him in 12s, but it's hard. I think that type of profile is so difference making when it's clicking that it's hard to justify dropping him fully. But in shallower formats,
There's replacement options.
That's the problem. Yeah. That's why I don't like playing them. They piss me off. There's always so much good stuff on the waiver wire. At least what I perceive as good when it's probably trash. But anyway.
All right. At Bush Mush, why are you standing up? Asks, What the hell should I do with Varsho? You play him. You play him at catcher and you just enjoy life. I know he's hitting 207. We got 7 homers and 6 stolen bases. That projects pretty well. His strike rate is 23%, walk rate 8%. Like, he's in line with norms. But what really stands out, he has the best max EV of his career at 112.5, still an 8.4% barrel, 35.9% RA rates in line with last year. He's not doing a ton different than last season. His ground ball rate's even down. He's hitting more line drives and more infield flies. Like, it's just a slight tweak to me. He's still playing very well. And the last thing before I let you have the floor on this one, people were complaining about him was like a week or two ago, like on a Monday. And let's just pick May 1st for fun. So if you guys like look at a slow start potentially in April, May 1st, since May 1st, Dalton Varsho, if Fangraphs wants, is hitting 224 with 5 homers, 2 stolen bases, 11 RBIs on 21% K rate. He's doing Dalton Varsho things. I don't know what you were expecting from him.
I think Varsho is just, I think you mentioned it. I think it was the infield fly ball rate. The fact that it's a, like, by far career worst, 25.5%. That's a lot of infield fly balls. He's getting under a lot, but it goes back to the fact that you mentioned he's elevating the ball. Maybe he's elevating it too much or getting under it too much, obviously. But Varsho, I mean, he's making strides in the areas you want him to. That's the funny part. A career best zone contact rate, which is, it's the first time it's above league average in his career, 87.9%. It's actually a strong, number. And then you have a career best swinging strike rate, which is 10.9%, the lowest of his career, which is better than league average as well. I'd say it's actually league average. But the point being is that Varsho is making strides in the contact department. You want him making more contact. You want him having less swing and miss. You like seeing that in a profile. The BABIP is a little low, 234, career 266 guy. That could be the difference in him hitting 235 and 207 right now. And he was never going to be a batting average help. And you knew that coming into the year. You knew Varsho wasn't going to project to be better than a 240, 250 hitter. I know the shift band was supposed to help him, and maybe it still will, but I think a lot of it is just simple. It's as simple as he needs to get some of those infield flies to not be infield flies. And that's something that you mentioned, a little tweak can happen, but you have to start him because there's not many catchers out there that you would start over him right now anyway, rest of season.
That's my point, is people don't look at him as an outfielder. That's next year. He's a catcher right now. And as a catcher, pretty darn solid. Free Shrugs at Welched asks, can Clint Frazier actually for really real put it all together this time? For those that sleep under a rock, because I was shocked when I saw this on Sunday getting ready for the first pitch pod, Clint Frazier got called up by the White Sox. Didn't even know what minor league system he was in. I gave up hope on this man. He's got one hit in his first two games, but I looked at his minor league numbers this year. He's hitting 315. He has 10 doubles, a triple, 8 home runs. It's 19 extra base hits in 31 games. Still striking out 35 times, though. Keep that in mind. 1 stolen base, if you want to go even deeper. You know, that's a 1.065 OPS. He has a 333 ISO. He's also walking over 13%. He's always been a great minor leaguer. It's never been an issue for Clint Frazier. And we just mentioned all the White Sox potential problems when Eloy Jimenez comes back. It feels like he'd be the first one gone to me.
He is in the lineup tonight, by the way, but it is against a lefty. So I think that's part of the issue. I think Frazier could be relegated to a weak side platoon because Frazier was always a lefty masher. People, that's what we, at least that's what I remember him as. I feel like he fell in and out of platoons in the past, and since being up, he started against one righty, now a lefty. I don't think the playing time is going to be there enough. You also mentioned playing time issues. They also have Oscar Colas that's probably going to come back up eventually as well. So I don't know if there's even going to be much of a leash there in terms of like how long he's going to hold off Colas. I know Colas isn't doing much in the minors, by the way. Actually, no, he's doing very well in the minors. I was looking at his major league line. In the minors, although the power and speed haven't really been there, Colas is still striking out just 18% or 17.7% in the minors, batting .329, .500 slug. This has been like extra base hits, I guess. But at the end of the day, Colas isn't going to stay down long either. Yeah, I don't know if Clint Frazier has a path to relevance beyond the short term. And even then, the leash will probably be short. And we haven't seen any trend of playing time in his favor just yet. So if I'm out on Frazier for now, trust me, I'm with everyone else. I want to see Frazier succeed. I can't. Yeah. I always have a soft spot for him, but I have to look past the soft spot and realize that I don't see a real path to relevance here.
Yep, 100% with you on that.
Clint Frazier. I know that's a big. Listen, that's one thing we hear it echoed. We hear it mocked. Got to say the name.
Yep, Clint Frazier. OUTD asks, when is Holiday? I'm guessing that's the youngster Holiday with the Orioles going to get promoted to the big leagues. The dude just went to what, double A? Like next year.
I think next year is like best case scenario.
Yeah, like let's calm the roll. He's dominated single A, he's in double A, just got drafted last year. The Orioles actually don't need anybody right now. If they bring him up, it'll be last minute. I don't see that happening.
Is he honestly in double A? Because I only see high A.
Maybe so he's got promoted to high A. I thought he got promoted to double A. Maybe
no, that he went from A ball to high A. So it's high A. Yeah,
he went from rookie ball to high A. He's got a long ways to go.
He's 19. I expect 3-4 years, especially the way the Orioles have been with their prospects. If you've noticed, like Grayson Rodriguez, it took them.
Sweet time.
And then right now they're not calling up DL Hall. They did call up Henderson early. I'll give them that. They did call up Henderson early. So maybe it really will depend. I think it's going to be at least 3 years because I think Holiday will be at least 22 when he debuts probably. He's 19 and a half right now. He has to go through double A. So I'd say maybe if we're lucky, we get a cup of coffee next year. And then he is really a 21, 22 year old call up the following year early, maybe like a early call up type of thing. Or one of those guys that breaks camp out of spring. And if he sucks, gets sent down, i.e. Jordan Walker. But I think best case scenario, we're talking 2 years, but most likely 3 years plus.
Renegade Envy asks, what to do with Austin Riley? Trade or ride out the storm? Ride out the storm because you're never going to get the value you deserve. That's the easiest way I can say it. Like he's too talented to just be like, oh, he's slumping. I got to trade him because you're going to trade him for like half his price and you're going to hate yourself when he starts hitting again. So don't do it.
Yeah, I don't know what you would get for him. I mean, and the funny thing is right now Riley's on a 1-2. He's on a 5-game hit streak right now. And he actually has a hit in 8 of 9. So he's turning it on a little bit. It hasn't been. I mean, only one home run over the span. So, and only what, 3 extra base hits out of all these hits, but still he's trending in the right direction is kind of what I'm getting at here. So yeah, Riley,
I'm not worried about Riley at all.
I think the problem is he set himself up for this over like this high expectation of batting average. I think people were viewing him more of the 4 category type. And I think he was always closer to a Matt Olson than he was.
If he were to just hit 270, we should be happy. The last two years has been ridiculous.
Well, he hit 270 last year. And I think even that was kind of pushing his luck because I don't think batting average was ever a strength. I think that was kind of the ceiling more than the floor because he hit in 2020 or was it 2021? He spiked that .303 batting average with a .368 BABIP is the issue. So I think Riley, 273 is more the ceiling than the floor for me. And he's hitting 256. If he hits 256 the rest of the way, but get that power back, you're okay. He's good. But right now projections have him hitting 270 plus the rest of the way. So maybe I'm underestimating the batting average. I never thought of his batting average as a ceiling, as a strength. And maybe, and especially now with the way that it's changed, it's not as much of the strength that might've been anyway, had you drafted him for it. But anyway,
Bottom line is you hold.
Yes. Sorry. I'm overthinking this. Yes.
Or not, we don't need to analyze Austin Riley. You just hold. Now, this one you can have as much fun with as you want because I personally don't mean to be rude. I don't like questions like this because it's just too wide freaking open. Scott Rode asks, what starting pitchers would you be targeting in a trade? I need pitching ratios. I don't know what your league is. I don't know anything that you have going on personally.
I'm not a fan of these questions because A, they're vague. B, I don't like rest. I'm not big on the rest of season.
Who do you prefer? I actually felt bad because I actually told someone in our Discord that messaged me privately. because it's been eating at me. They said rest of season. I said, stop looking at the rest of season. Look at like the next week or two, if not month at the most, because we have a long ways to go.
Unless it's like stud for stud, like what do you think rest of season for? Like, would you?
Most questions aren't stud for stud though. It's
like Paul DeJong and Mickey Moniak. Exactly. I think was like, one of my questions. I'm like, dude, I think the way you should be looking at this, as you mentioned, it's like week to week, month to month, maybe a month out at most. And I'm like, right now, give me the hot hand, because a lot of these guys, rest of season, there's a good chance neither one of these guys will have any value in 2 weeks.
Bingo.
And that's why it's like the rest of – I understand what they're trying to get at. They want to know
who's – I do too. That's why I don't want to be rude about it, but it's like we got to narrow our focus on
things. I think that there has to be a shift in analysis, just like, you know, the whole there's a few things that drive me nuts, but this is one on the whole rest of season outlook, is because the way teams change, the way the game has changed, you have to shift your mindset from a rest of season outlook to a what are they going to do for me now outlook. In a lot of cases, not your high end players, you want to get more of a bigger look for them, but these fringe guys, you look at, it has to be more of like a, okay, they've been running hot, the playing time's there, let's see what they can do for me, and I'm going to value him over this other guy in the same similar tier. I'm going to value these guys similarly. And okay, which guy's been better lately? Which guy has better matchups? All right, cool. I'm going to roll with him for now, but be willing to make that switch the second that something happens that suggests you should. I understand that's a lot of work for a lot of people. People kind of just want like the, hey, give me the answer so I can go with this. And if you're wrong, I'm going to blame you. I'm okay with that too. It's kind of what I signed up for without realizing it back in the day. Yeah. But there's definitely a need, in my opinion, for a shift in how we look at vast majority of players. Wait, because of how teams just
small quadrants. Don't look at the full picture anymore. Like, break it down.
I understand there's a time and place for that, and it goes back to talking about stud players. Like, okay, rest of season, who do you prefer over Kevin Gausman? And,
would you rather have Riley Green or Matt Chapman rest of season? Okay, let's have a conversation.
Because at least that's the fringe part of it. That's where it starts getting, okay, after these guys, those are top 100 players, top 120 players.
Yes.
And now once you get beyond those top 120 to 150 types, the obvious names, guys that kind of deserve being on your roster rest of the season, a lot of these names you're getting are just so fringe that it's like it's just be willing to get rid of them, any of these names. Be willing to get rid of any of these guys for the next hot commodity. Like, you want to stay up on the hot commodities. You don't want to be married to this guy rest of the season. Because for a week, I thought Moniak was worth more than – I thought Moniak was a better player than Paul DeJong this week. Doesn't mean it's going to hold true next week. That's why it's like rest of the season, I don't know. But right now, this is what I'm feeling.
Yep, I'm with you. Sorry that bugged anybody, but that's kind of been brewing on me to, also.
Well, I have an idea. So I got two names that came to mind for the ratios, honestly. Braxton Garrett and Bryce Elder. I wasn't sure how deep we're going, but those are guys that you could probably get for cheaper off your waiver wire if you're in a shallow league.
You could just like, I'm going to be aware though, for rest of season, I would not be shocked if either one of them gets destroyed at some point.
Oh, absolutely.
But that goes back to the point of why I was like,
that's why I'm like,
we need a different question.
we need more in-depth knowledge of the league type, but uh-huh. I'm trying to play it safe here. And those are guys that I think of when I think of ratio protectors. I think of guys like, they're not going to be the biggest strikeout guys, but they can, you know, go 5-6 innings, be good, not great, and help at least stabilize my ratios. And those two names came to mind.
I agree with you on that, though.
So I don't know. I'm trying to be somewhat useful, but I'm sure that I'm guessing. I bet you there's probably better options for them. But those are the two
names. If you want to message both of us or one of us with more
message
details,
Bubba.
More details will help you with that. How about that?
Message Bubba. Message.
That's my way of saying we're sorry for being us, but it was just like, we need more information. And then the last thing is more just kind of a fun question from Dave Petraziello. He always has good stuff here, and he puts, and it's kind of ironic because we've been talking about Corbin Burns a lot in our Discord. Do you think Corbin Burns pulls a 1998 Randy Johnson if he gets traded by the deadline? I looked up his stats while you were talking. So Randy, when he got traded to the Houston Astros in 98, he basically made 11 starts. He had a 1.28 ERA, a 2.04 FIP. He allowed 12 runs in 84 and a third innings. He struck out 116 in those 84 and a third innings. That's a 27.4% K2 walk. He had a 0.43 home run per nine. The list goes on and on what Randy Johnson did because he's a freak. No, I do not think Corbin Burns does that. There's something physically wrong, but if it be at the pitch clock or something, but we saw it towards the end of last year, the velocity started completely like decreasing slowly. Again, why rest of season is a tough projection to make, especially for pitchers. I don't think he makes that transition if Corbin Burns gets traded.
Yeah, my issue is where does he get traded? Does he go to the Rays, who will just fix him overnight?
That's true. Does he go to Houston? We're all of a sudden like, oh, hey, check this out. Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I'm like, it depends where he goes, but I'm not going to get my hopes up. I mean, if you go back to the second half of last year, 3.6 Sierra, all the underlying indicators, you know, 3.97 ERA, 3.49 xFIP. So it's like he's supposed to be a mid to high threes ERA guy right now. And this is over a 145 inning sample going back to the second half of last year. So Burns has been having issues. And this is where we give Rob DiPietro his props for, you know, rightfully being concerned, I guess, you know, like I know I poo-pooed his take. I didn't think he was gonna be this right, but here we are. I mean, you get, so I had a blind spot. Now, remember, it's one of those things I have to learn from it and realize what did I miss that he saw, and what can I be? Maybe he put more credence in the second half numbers than I did, probably. But at the end of the day, yeah, good on you, Rob, if you're listening. If you're not listening, which wouldn't surprise me either, somebody else will tell you that. Good job, Rob. But yeah, it's just looking at Burns, I don't really know what to expect. I think more of the same this year. I'm looking at him more. I'm viewing him more in that SP3 type of light right now.
Yeah. I've been stacking against him in DFS. Let's put it that way.
God.
Which never would have thought I would have said in March. All right. Two quick notes that came through while we've been talking. TJ Friedl is back and he's leading off for the Reds on Tuesday night. Another guy that came back quick from a quote unquote oblique injury.
Who sat? Senzel's in, McLean's in. I know people were talking about McLean being a potential for, India's third. Okay. I'm surprised India's been leading off all year. I thought maybe India was getting a day off. Fraley's in. Out there still. So Barrero is obviously platooning.
Myers Newman. In. Newman's Wait, in. What the heck's going on here?
I'm just trying to see who's losing the playing time here, because this is obviously, you got to figure out. I know Fairchild's out, obviously, but he's
kind of Senzel's even in. Steer went to first.
Steers in, Stevenson's in.
Catching. Yeah, that's what I'm looking at. What in the world is going on here?
It feels like somebody. Oh, you know what? Did Will Benson get optioned? I guess Will Benson probably got optioned.
Yeah, I didn't see who got the up and down part of it yet. I just got the lineup.
Fraley's in. Maybe this is just normal, but I think maybe throwing India from first to third threw me off, because Friedl always batted top two or three against righties as well. Fraley, Stevens, yeah, this is actually pretty typical. I think Will Myers being in, Myers was out for a little bit. We saw a lot of Ramos and Fairchild,
and Ramos went to the IL. So,
I think this is the normal cast of characters. It's just one of those things where, I mean, Newman doesn't ever. That's the thing though. Newman, he started one of the last five against righties. So him getting a start against righties is kind of weird here, especially over Barrero, who's been playing against him most of the time all year. But other than that, I guess second base. But even who played? Oh, because you know what? India's DH. Okay. So we're overthinking it. I think the lineup's rather normal, but Friedl is back and leading off.
He's moved people in. That's my biggest thing. Friedl's back, folks. He's leading off.
But yeah, sorry. I like, something's wrong here. It's just, I think it was just throwing Friedl up there above India and McLean staying there. And okay. Yeah. Sorry.
The other thing I'll mention is Cody Singa was supposed to start his two step tonight. He got moved to Wednesday. Tyler Miguel got moved to Tuesday from Wednesday. They switched spots. So Singa now just gets his one start at Chicago. Miguel now gets Chicago and Colorado on Sunday, and if that rotation stays the same, things next week Kota Senga is going to get Philadelphia and the Blue Jays, so have fun with that. All right, final thoughts, Curlin, before we head on out of here.
I don't think I just do, man. Brain my brain, go. So I'm empty. Yeah, words of wisdom once a week with Curlin, you know, eighth overall in the main event, but can't talk.
Yep.
It goes hand in hand.
There you go. Perfect stuff there. Brains before voice. It's very funny. It's always that you think before you speak.
I don't. There's no filter.
He just thinks. He doesn't do this.
I just speak. Just speak. I don't think.
But we'll wrap it up there before he speaks too much. You can find Mike on Twitter at Mike_Curlin. I'm at BDNTech. Don't forget to check out Gain of the Edge Fantasy on Patreon. Patreon.com/GTFantasy. Mike's work also at The Athletic. I have many other places, so just check me out on Twitter. You get all the goodies there. But until next time, this was Bench with Bubba, episode 590. Catch y'all later.
Looking for a fun way to win up to 25 times your money this football season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of statistics, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and an enormous selection of players and stat options are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million football fans who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/get100 and use code GET100. That's code GET100 at prizepicks.com/get100 for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.